Today, we're going to do one more lesson here in the book of Proverbs, and I'm not sure if I'm going to do another lesson in Proverbs right now. I've got a couple other thoughts on two other lessons, but I'm going to save those for a later time, I believe. But this morning, we're going to talk about the powerful tongue, and Proverbs does have a great deal to say about the tongue. And there are two typical misuses of the tongue that are really addressed here in the book of Proverbs. And the first one would be lying. And of course, we understand that lying is an abomination to the Lord. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 22 says, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are His delight." And so the first clause here in this proverb, it describes that the hatred that the Lord has for lying lips. And I think we understand that. And we understand that deception, overt deception especially, is not tolerated by God. There's not any justification for that. In fact, you know, Revelation tells us that liars will partake in hell fire. So when we talk about lies, you know, one of the things that we do sometimes is we try to categorize lies, and we talk about them as a bold-faced lie or a white lie. In fact, you know, one of the things in my line of work is working with printing equipment is that there are different thicknesses of paper, and different thicknesses of paper won't always run through a machine. And so customers will lie to the machine about what kind of paper they're putting in there to see if it will go through the machine. And so that comes up in the training that I'm doing, and it's kind of a quandary for me, because am I going to encourage them to lie to the machine when they bump up against a something that they can't run? And then they have to adjust it and say, well, I'm not really putting in there what I'm putting in there. So people in all sorts of ways, you know, are doing what they consider to be a little white lie. And there's not really any justification for that. You know, these lies of convenience and speaking false words is a way that we can lie, but that's not the only way. And Solomon, you know, talks about other ways in which we lie. If you look at the rest of this verse here, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are His delight. We understand lying lips are an abomination, but what are the lying lips contrasted to? It's contrasted here to people who act faithfully. And Solomon doesn't say here that truthful lips are God's delight. That's not the way it's put, but what Solomon is saying here is that his son needs to follow through with what he says he's going to do. Those who act faithfully are His delight. And so there's a difference here between the lying lips and those who act faithfully. That's really referencing those who are going to do what they say that they're going to do. You know, act is certainly an action word. It's in the word. And so Solomon is teaching the need to follow through on what he says he's going to do or what he says he won't do. And so you could say when looking at this passage that lying lips are not simply about just saying something that is false. But lying lips could also be that we say that we will do something and then we don't perform that act. Because those who act faithfully are contrasted to those who have lying lips. And I think this is an important proverb that we need to be aware of concerning our faithfulness to God. You know, we think about lying. We think about saying something that's a mistruth. Something that is not true, that it's false. And we know that would be a lie. But also, the indication here is that if you're going to be of righteous character, you're not going to speak an outright lie. But lying is not just that. You have to follow through on your words. And Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 that your yes needs to be yes and your no needs to be no. And so think about the action of what it is that you say you are, who you say you are as a Christian, and how that is reflected in your life. The things that you say that you're going to do, you need to follow through on those things. You know, if your mother tells you you need to clean your room and he says, yes, I'll do that today, and you didn't do it, what did you just do? Well, you had lying lips. And you certainly had the action didn't follow through with what you said you were going to do. In chapter 10 and verse 18 of Proverbs, it says, he who conceals his hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. Have you ever thought about concealing hatred as being the same as having lying lips? Isn't that interesting? That this proverb says that concealing hatred is like having lying lips. And so what this is indicating, that the person that has this internal hatred, you know, they're really reflecting dishonesty. And this proverb seems to be talking about that person that's two-faced, that is thinking one thing and is doing something else. So Solomon's describing the kind of person that is going to conceal his or her hatred to your face. You know, well, they may speak nice, kind, flattering words, but behind your back, they'll express their hatred of you to other people. And unfortunately, probably many people have had this very experience in their life, where there's somebody that's you know, covers you with flattery and says nice things, and you think that you have a good relationship, and then you find out later that you really didn't have the relationship that you thought you did because of things that are said or done. And this, you know, commonly, you know, happens in the workplace, where people may hold something back, and then later they will say things that are certainly not kind and not flattering, and express, you know, words of hatred about you or somebody else to other people. So, you know, acting dishonestly toward a person is what I believe Solomon is getting at here. A person who is acting dishonestly, not just saying something, but the person that is fake. And you may think that person is based upon your conversations that you've had. You may consider them to be your friend, but then you realize that person who you think is your friend is one that is speaking lying lips. The one who conceals his hatred, the one that's two-faced, the one that is not consistent, has lying lips. And whoever spreads slander is a fool. Which brings us to our next point, which is certainly talked about a lot in the book of Proverbs, and that's whispering or gossiping. Chapter 16, verse 28 says, a perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer or a gossip separates the best of friends. And you've probably heard this proverb spoken about before and understand the concepts behind it, but it really shows the amount of damage that can be done by being a whisperer or being a gossip. And even those who are the best of friends will become divided if one or both, you know, parties is engaging in gossip. And so this proverb is really comparative. It's comparing the perverse person to the whisperer. And the perverse person, that's a pretty strong word. You know, if we called somebody perverse, you know, that would be considered a deep insult. But if we called, you know, somebody a whisperer, we may not consider that as to be as bad as perverse, if we're weighing those two words in balance. But what Solomon says is that the one who is the gossip or the one who is the whisperer is as bad as the perverse person. The perverse person, the perverse man sows strife, a whisperer separates the best of friends. So sowing strife here is compared to separating the best of friends. And, you know, that's a difficult thing when you have friends and then, you know, something happens because of your action or your words, or maybe it's their actions or their words, and that relationship is severed or that relationship is damaged. And, you know, that happens in families, it happens between siblings, it happens between spouses, where something is said that is hurtful or gossipy, and then it takes a long time to repair that. But, you know, the gossip never thinks of themselves as a perverse, evil person. You know, those of you that are old like me, you remember on Saturday nights that Hee Haw came on. And if you remember Hee Haw, those of you that are smiling out there know where I'm going with this, that they had the gossip fence and they had the lady singing the song, "Never Will You Hear One of Us Repeating Gossip, So You Better Be Sure and Listen Close the First Time." And then the song would proceed with them talking about somebody and gossiping. And so I don't know how many times at summer camp I saw counselors get up and they would sing that song, and they would, you know, change the words to it to make it funny. But see, that's kind of the idea that people have toward gossip. You know, sometimes they treat it as a joke. You know, they don't treat it as something that is serious. And I understand that song was kind of making fun of it. But when it comes to our responsibility as Christians, we need to remember that it's really not a joke. You know, gossip is not something that we need to think lightly of, because Solomon talks about it in the terms of that person that's doing that is perverse. But people that gossip don't think about that. You know, we're just talking about somebody, or we're sharing the truth in love, is the way some people like to say it. You know, because, you know, that's the only reason that I'm talking about that person, is because I'm so concerned about them and what they're doing, and I think everybody else should know about it too. Well, we try to construe that so it seems better that we're violating this principle. We need to remember that if what we are speaking is not useful, it's not beneficial, and it's not something that you would want that other person to hear, then you really need to stop and think about what it is that you're doing. And it's difficult. It is difficult because sometimes we want to talk. We want to tell other people about things that we know, or we want to tell other people about something that we think may be important. But when you stop and think about, you know, what good is it going to do for me to talk about this? Is it going to be beneficial? Is it going to be useful? Is it going to help anybody? Think about those things, which, you know, really, you know, brings us to the next proverb. I don't think I have it up on the screen here, but in Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 20, it says, "Fire goes out without wood, and quarrels disappear when gossip stops." I certainly don't need to explain what this proverb means in regard to a fire going out without wood. We all know that if you start a fire and you don't keep putting wood on the fire, that it's going to burn out. Just as wood is fuel for the fire, you know, so is, you know, a gossip a fuel for fights. And sometimes we can add to strife and quarrels because we won't keep our mouth shut. I'll just relate really quickly a situation I had just a couple of days ago with work, and I had to set up a conference call to discuss a problem that we were trying to be the go-between between one of our vendors and a customer who wasn't happy with the way a project was proceeding. And so there's been a lot of internal talk about whether or not the customer was at fault because they had expectations that were too high, and you know, things were not really scoped out properly, so you knew what the project was supposed to be. And so there's been all kinds of talk about that. But the bottom line with this call was, we're all going to work together to make the customer happy. You know, we're not going to talk about, you know, what went wrong before and who's to blame. You know, we're going to talk about making the customer happy. And the vendor, you know, lights into us at the beginning of the call and talks about how they're $20,000 over budget, and you know, a lot of the things that were said by this person I knew were not true, and and it needed to, I felt like it needed to be addressed. But then I thought, talk about that is not going to do anything to achieve the goal of what the call was about, and that is to make the customer happy. And so there were three other people with my work that called me after the call, and I said, "Can you believe what he said? That was so unprofessional." And so we all had the same thought. We were all in different locations. I was in Atlanta. One was in Montgomery. One was in Birmingham. So we were all on the same call thinking the same thing, and we were all biting our tongue so bad that it's probably bleeding, you know. But we all knew that this was wrong, but we all had the same thought that this is not going to contribute to helping the situation by getting into an argument. Fire goes out without wood, and so we just didn't put any more wood on that fire. And this happens with Christians. This happens with people that Solomon is talking about. Solomon had dealt with this, and he's telling his son, you don't need to get into situations where you are continuing to make a situation worse. Strife and quarreling and relationship problems, it's guaranteed to get worse and worse when there's whispering and when there is gossip and when people are speaking when they shouldn't be. People split friendships, they split marriages, they fracture relationships when we speak to others about things that shouldn't be talked about. I'll just brag on Jarell here for a second, because I know that there's been times that I've done things that she thought was dumb, and there's been times that she's disagreed with me about things. But I think I know that she does not go and berate me in front of other people. She does not go and tell Jillian, you know, Randy is so dumb, he does this, this, and this. You know, but there's wives that do that. They go and talk about how bad their husband is, or husbands go and talk about how bad their wife is. What does that do to the relationship? It's enough for me to know Jarell thinks those things about me. She doesn't have to go and tell somebody else and air that dirty laundry, as we call it. But you see, Solomon says, if you're going to keep putting wood on that fire, what's going to happen? It's not going to be good. Chapter 20, verse 19 says, a gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid a man who talks too much. Or you could also say, avoid a woman who talks too much. And we understand this. We understand this principle. But people sometimes don't want to avoid the gossip. They may not be the one who gossips themselves, but they sure like to hear it. A person that I used to work with at my previous job, somebody came to her and said, did you hear about, you know, so-and-so in this situation? I said, do you know anything about that? She said, no, but if you give me 10 minutes, I'll find out. And because she knew who it was that she could go find out the dirt on somebody. And she was all about that, adding fuel to that fire. Which, you know, really brings us to this next point in chapter 18, in verse 8. Chapter 18 and verse 8. And for some reason, I don't have all my slides up here. But the chapter 18 and verse 8 says that the words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the innermost parts of the body. And that certainly does describe the way that some feel about gossip. It's something that's very tasteful to them. It's something that they would like to participate in. This proverb is actually mentioned twice, and it's also in chapter 26, in verse 22. The words of a whisper are like tasty morsels. So Solomon here is describing a couple of problems with gossiping. First of all, the pain of saying hurtful words and reaches all the way down into the innermost parts of the body. But the other point, which really is the key point the psalm is making, is that we want to listen to gossip. The words of a whisper are like delicious morsels. If you've got a cat, you know the difference the cat pays, how they pay attention to the cat treats and the regular cat food. You know, all we have to do to find our cat is to shake the bag of treats. But it knows the difference between the cat food. Sometimes I try to trick it. I'll put regular cat food, if we're out of the treats, into the bag and shake that. And she's not happy with that. Those are not the tasty morsels that she wants. And the gossip can gossip because there's always somebody that has the ears open to hear the gossip. And that's what Solomon is saying. The gossip's words are like delicious morsels. We want that. We want to listen to the words of the whisperer. We want to hear the dirt on another person. And it's been said many times that if the gossip had no one that would pay attention to them, no one that would listen to them, then there wouldn't be any whispering. Solomon is saying, you're just as condemned for listening to it as you are as if you said it. The words of a whisper are like delicious morsels. He's saying, he's implying that you should not be dining on those morsels. Chapter 17, verse 4 says, an evildoer gives heed to wicked lips. A liar listens eagerly to a spiteful tongue. So again, notice that who is the evildoer here? Not talking about the gossiper, but the gossipee, the one who is listening to the gossip. We are the evil one for listening. So, you know, let that sink in, because we want to blame the one that is speaking the gossip. And, you know, certainly that's condemned. How many times in your life have you had someone come to you and they start gossiping and you say, no, I don't need to hear that. That's none of my business. You don't need to be talking to me about that. Unfortunately, I can count just about every time that I've done that, because it hasn't been a lot. I can remember very specifically times when people have come to me and I have stopped them. And there's probably a lot of times that I should have stopped listening and said, I don't have any business hearing what it is that you're telling me. Solomon is spending a lot of time here condemning the person who is listening. Solomon says, you need to walk away from the person with wicked lips. You need to be the one who will tell the other person that that's none of your business and it's none of my business, and you shouldn't be speaking that. Otherwise, we are evildoers because we are joining into it and listening. So, those are some of the negative things. What are the wise things that Solomon has to say about the tongue? What is it that we can do with the tongue that is considered to be wise? Obviously, you know, we should be controlling the tongue. We need to control the tongue. The wise tongue speaks less. Chapter 21, verse 23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from trouble. So Solomon has described how the tongue can cause strife, it can bring trouble, and now he's telling us you need to guard your mouth. You've heard parents sometimes describe a child and say, I really need a muzzle for that child. Or maybe you've described adults that way. Maybe somebody needs... What does that mean? It means they have loose lips. They talk too much. And Solomon is telling to guard your mouth. What he means by that is that keep yourselves out of trouble by not talking so much. So many of the troubles that we encounter, they come from our not controlling our tongues. How many times do we say things and as soon as we say it, we know I shouldn't have said that. Or I shouldn't have texted that. We say things we know we shouldn't, and then they come back to haunt us. Chapter 10, verse 19, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. The call here is to control the tongue. The more we talk, the more likely we're going to get ourselves into trouble. And, you know, I have a lot of admiration for people that I know that can very well control their tongue. I've told you before that when my father had personal studies with people, and I would go with him on some of those, and I would hear some of the things that came out of the mouth of those he was teaching, and some of them, you know, would be involved in some kind of false doctrine, or they believed something that wasn't correct about salvation, or there were all kinds of things that would come out of the mouth of different people, and I knew what they were saying wasn't true. It needed to be corrected. But my dad did not pounce on every error that he heard coming out of somebody's mouth, somebody that he was trying to build a relationship with to be able to teach them the truth. He was trying to have a foundation to build them up and help them to understand the Bible. And if the first thing that he did was to pounce on every error that he saw there, any misunderstanding that they might have had about the Bible I can't sit there. I've heard other people say this may be the only opportunity that I have to talk to this person, and then they pounce right on everything that they hear that's wrong because they think, well, I may never get a chance to talk to them again, and they damage the relationship. And my dad, those of you that knew him, he talked a lot. He talked too much sometimes. But when I saw him in that environment, he was very controlling of his tongue because his goal was to win that person and to win that soul for the Lord. Think before you speak. In chapter 29, in verse 20, it says, do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Again, this means that you need to engage your brain before you open your mouth. Or how we say that? Engage your brain before you put your mouth in motion. Solomon says there's more hope for a fool than for the person who is hasty in his words. Think before you open your mouth. And we know this. This is not new territory. This is not something that you've never heard before. But how often do we practice this? Do we really think before we speak? I don't. I don't always think before I speak. I'll just go ahead and say it because all of you that know me know it's true. I need to think before I speak. And the condemnation for the person who speaks before thinking here is very, very strong. Because Solomon says there's more hope for a fool than for him. And that is sad. Because what has Solomon consistently said throughout the book of Proverbs about the fool? That there's not any hope for the fool. And he's saying the one who doesn't think about what he's saying, he's saying there's more hope. The one that I told you that there's no hope for, I'm telling you that there's more hope for that person than there is for you. If you're hasty in your words. We also need to listen more. Listen before speaking. Chapter 18, verse 13. The one who gives an answer before he listens, this is foolishness and a disgrace for him. If you want to see something funny, David mentioned this morning, you know, going on YouTube. If you go on YouTube and watch bad answers from Family Feud or something, you know, they have compilations of those things. And some of the funniest things that, that you see is where somebody will push the buzzer and they'll answer the question before they heard the whole question. And the answer has nothing to do with what the question actually was. But they heard a couple of words, they thought they knew where it was going, they hit the buzzer and they answered, and it's totally wrong and humorous. And Solomon says it's not really humorous to do that, the one who gives an answer before he listens. I think we all have had that test that the teacher gives where they tell you to read all the instructions before you begin taking the test, and it's a trick, you know, and you go and you answer all the questions and you get to the end of the instructions, it says you don't have to do any of this, you know, just write your name on the paper and turn it in. And you've gone and you've answered everything because you didn't read the instructions that told you you didn't really have to take the test. You didn't listen before you engaged. The one who gives an answer before he listens, it's a foolishness and disgrace for him. So we often don't think before speaking, but often we just don't listen to a matter before speaking. We give our opinion on things when we don't have all the information, and we make a hasty response. And how many times do we make a decision without all the facts, and then we have to backtrack and say, well, I've got more information now. I'm going to have to change what I told you. What do we need to speak? We need to speak words that are fitting. Solomon says a word at the right time is like golden apples on a silver tray. And if you like apples and silver trays, that's a really positive thing. A man finds joy in giving an apt reply. And how good is a timely word? Proverbs chapter 15, verse 23. So Solomon, he reminds us of the usefulness and the value of being able to speak the right words at the right time. And we want to be that kind of person that will say the right thing and also be the type of person that won't say the wrong thing. And too often we are like the fools that Solomon talks about that cause problems because we can't give a timely word, and we give other words that aren't appropriate. Solomon also talks about pleasant words. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Chapter 16, verse 24. So he's showing us the power of words to bring healing to people that need physical healing, spiritual healing. The book of Job certainly reminds us of the power of words, because you remember, you know, the great power of the words of Job's friends and how Job was feeling so horrible, and his friends came in and just said the right things and made Job feel so much better. Now, if you know anything about the book of Job, you know that's not true. They showed a total inability to speak the right words at the right time. They could have brought healing and comfort to Job, but instead what they did is they accused Job. Well, these things would obviously not be happening to you. If you were as upright and righteous as you say that you are, then none of these things would be happening to you. And so Job said, you are all a bunch of miserable comforters. Not pleasant words. Not appropriate words, not fitting words. Chapter 15, verse 4 says, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. So this proverb, again, is one that's a comparative one, that it compares about the ability of the tongue to be able to heal or to be able to hurt. So you can crush people by being thoughtless and being careless with your words, or you can have a tongue that brings healing. Chapter 18, verse 21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. If we control our tongue, if we think before we speak, if we listen before speaking, that'll help us to have tongues that bring healing. I'm sure we have all had different people in our life that that have had both of these kind of influences on us. There might be the one that you dread having to spend time with because you know that every word that's going to come out of their mouth is about how horrible everything is or how horrible they feel, and you don't dare ask them how they're doing because they'll tell you. But I think about Martha's sister. I think about Virginia Wilson going to see her when she was, you know, when she was here, and then when her health would deteriorated where she couldn't be with us anymore, and you go see her in her assisted living facility. She had problems. You knew she had problems. She had physical ailments. But she didn't talk about that, and you went away feeling better than you did when you went to see her. It was not something that was depressing. She was one that was full of laughter and being positive. The tongue that brings healing is a tree of life. And sometimes it's those that are in really poor circumstances that may have the tongue that can bring healing. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Control your tongue. Chapter 16, verse 23, a wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. Wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. So where does this tongue that does so much good come from? It comes from the wise heart. And so if we are swift to speak, and we are not particularly known as one who is a giver of helpful words, what Solomon says is that you need a change of heart. Your heart's not wise. The tongue speaks the matters of the heart. Our tongues reflect our character. We also need to realize one thing that needs to be spoken is reproving words. Chapter 25, verse 12, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise man's rebuke to a listening ear. And you know, you may think, well, this is counter to what you've been talking about. This is negative. Rebuke is not something that's positive. But it is positive if it comes from the wise man. It's positive if it comes from the one that you know that they care about you. And that they want what is best for you. A wise man's rebuke is something that you really, really ought to take into account. And so there are a couple of necessary components for this rebuke or this reproof to be like an earring of gold. First of all, it's got to be the wise man giving the rebuke. You know, Solomon is thinking about the person who's able to give that timely word, that person that can talk about something that's fitting for the occasion. And so the reproof comes from the wise. And the other thing that's a necessary component here is not just the one who's doing the speaking, but the one who's doing the listening. The listening ear that's accepting the rebuke is also needed. So if there's a good timely word that the wise person is speaking, but the person on the other end is not willing to open their ears and hear it, it doesn't do any good, does it? When the wise speak, we need to listen. When those who have respect and knowledge and wisdom and righteousness speak, we need to always be willing to listen to what they have to say. Chapter 28, verse 33 says, he who rebukes a man will find more favor afterward than he who flatters with the tongue. You know, this proverb is kind of humorous because what you see here is that the rebuke is not always appreciated right at the beginning. How do you feel when you are rebuked or when you know somebody is going to call you on the carpet for something? You just tense up and you really don't want to hear it and it's difficult. You know, sometimes we get defensive and we start trying to attack the person who is rebuking us. But Solomon says if you give give it some time and think about it, you may realize that the rebuke was necessary. The favor comes afterward. It's not really before or during the rebuke that you can appreciate it, but you can find favor if you take it to heart. Now, if somebody comes up and flatters you, you immediately accept that. You immediately accept those words. Solomon's saying those are not the ones that are important. The flattery is not useful like the rebuke is. Accept that rebuke from those that are wise, and you'll find favor in it if you take it to heart. So in conclusion, what we have said this morning is that you don't need to have lying lips. You need to mean what you say. You need to follow through on your words. Because God hates lying lips. Proverbs also teaches us that gossip causes strife. It destroys relationships. Are the words useful? Are they helpful? Are they something you would actually share with the person that you're talking about? Then, if not, don't speak those things. And stop listening. Stop opening your ears to gossip. It may be something that is very tantalizing. It's those tasty morsels that Solomon talks about. But you are just as ungodly as the person saying those things if you're willing to listen to it. Also, to be thoughtful and slow to speak. Control your tongue and try to have the ability to speak the right words at the right time. Things that are helpful and things not things that will bring pain. I think all of these lessons from Proverbs are very useful. I think this one is particularly useful, and maybe it's because I know that this is one that I really need, and maybe there's others here that need it as well. But we need to take all the wisdom that we read here in the book of Proverbs to heart and understand how important these things are to us to be pleasing to God. If we can help you in any way today, to respond to the invitation of the gospel of Christ. If you've been thinking about this and haven't done what it is that you need to do, you've been putting it off for some reason, there's no better time than the present to make your life right with God by being buried in baptism and having the right relationship with Him. We'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.